5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to Tech Talk from RNIB Connect Radio, the RNIB's technology show for blind and partially sighted people. See technology differently. Now, here's your hosts, Stephen Scott and Robin Christofferson.
Hello and welcome to Tech Talk. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, it is I, back with you once again, Stephen Scott here, on the new look, Tech Talk 2.0. Do you like the new place? It's nice, isn't it? With me this week, my new co-host is here. Be nice to him, ladies and gentlemen. It's Robin Christofferson. Hello, sir.
Hi, guys. I am the newbie. I just hope I can fill some, I don't know if they were big shoes, but they were talented shoes of Tim and Sean. How can I do it?
Absolutely. Fred Astaire and the other
Ginger.
One. Yeah, that's it. they've been brilliant, and Sean and Tim absolutely have loved being here, and lots of people sending us some lovely emails saying, you know, so sad to see them going, but looking forward to the future as well. And that is exactly what we're doing right here on the brand new Tech Talk. So, we're still going to be discussing all the same topics, the same discussions, the same arguments, I'm sure. Lots of interesting stuff to come. But we kick things right off with a chat very soon about our top topic this week, which is Mobile World Congress. This was something you were at, Robin. I'm jealous.
Yeah, it was chaos.
I can imagine. But you talked to some rather interesting people. You didn't go to the usual suspects.
No, I tried to spread my net wide and find some interesting, with an accessibility twist angle every time.
Yeah, the one I'm looking forward to most, I don't want to give too much away, but the air taxi sounds amazing. So yeah, I'm looking forward to hearing about that. Plus, we're talking about Samsung, because we didn't get to that last week. Samsung brought out some new phones, and I've got a big announcement about that. Oh, lots to come on the brand new Tech Talk. But first, let's say hello to Robin Christofferson. Can I say this, Robin? MBE?
No. Oh,
yeah. Well, I'm saying it. I've got a Knight of the Realm here. I want people to know about it. So first of all, Robin, for those who aren't aware of you, and I'm sure that's only a few people, tell us all about you.
It's only because I've been around so long. Yeah, I work for AbilityNet. I'm head of digital inclusion at AbilityNet. And for those who don't know, we're all things tech and disability. Obviously, vision is a huge part of what we're all about. And me personally, not being able to see as well, you know, it's a subject that's dear to my heart. So yeah, really, really pleased to be on Tech Talk 2.0.
So tell me this. So you can see what? Something? Nothing? What?
No, I used to have perfect vision, and then it just gradually went. And it's a very boring condition. It's just inflammation of the retina leading, but it isn't one of the kind of normal suspects. It's a kind of a uveitis type thing. But yeah, mid-20s, not much useful vision. Mid-30s, not much light perception. And now I'm just, you know.
That's it.
I'm a dog user and a tech user. And yeah, no useful vision whatsoever.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I know you're going through the process of a new dog, aren't you, at the moment? That's always fun.
Yes, and it's all change in the guide dog's world, which I don't know whether we will cover that at any point. Obviously, technology has a bearing too. But they're doing things very differently, and it's looking like it might be quite a gap before Archie's shoes are filled with the next one.
Yeah, you're not alone in that one, for sure. And it's interesting, isn't it? Because there's so many dog owners out there who are, you know, who've been a guide dog owner for a long time and still waiting a long time to get a new dog.
Yep.
You know, you'd kind of expect that with new applicants. You'd almost expect there to be a backlog because they're trying to fill, make sure everyone who's not got a dog who had one will get one now. But even that seems to be a bit of a hit and miss situation. So no, that you're right. This is something we want to come to. But I will say, though, I think technology does play a huge part and will continue to play a huge part in this. Although, as we've talked about a lot in the past here on Tech Talk, we've never really found a suitable tech solution that takes over from a guide dog or a white cane, have we?
Absolutely. I think that whilst they're really, really useful additional helpful devices, solutions. Having a guide dog with real intelligence in there to just weave you seamlessly around things effortlessly, it felt like most of the time, you know, you're not going to be able to reproduce that, however smart some of these apps and devices and wearables are. But yeah, let's look to the future and see a time when artificial intelligence may bridge that gap. But for the moment, you know, it's the good old dog that needs to be taken out twice a day. And yeah, it's good stuff, though.
Although in saying that, you know, I'm looking forward to artificial intelligence in my life purely because any intelligence would be welcome. Right, look, let's talk about Mobile World Congress, because you, and I am very jealous about this, you know, for Tech Talk 2.0, you went along and you got the opportunity to speak to some very interesting people, didn't you?
Absolutely. So we're going to hear now a little package of three quick interviews that I did with interesting stall holders, exhibitors there, by the way, I should say. It was an absolutely massive event, spreading over 8 halls, over 2,400 exhibitors in stalls or booths that range from extremely large down to just quite large. And it was the size of an airport, this thing. So yeah, it was a big event, and you'll probably be able to tell that it was a very busy event as well. So we're first going to drop in on the giant iTab stand, and these guys are creating giant tablets, which have obvious benefits for people with a vision impairment. Then we're going to drop in on the Vuzix smart glasses guys. They're leaders in the sort of smart heads-up displays and smart glasses. And finally, we're going to go to Reticare. They are a relatively small booth, but a really valuable company that is helping to try and save our eyesight. I am here today on the Giant iTab stall here at Mobile World Congress. Giant iTab is the name of the company, and that's what they do. They create giant interactive tablets, and I'm very fortunate to be here with the founder of Giant iTab.
Hi there, I'm Mark Jones. I'm the founder and CEO of Giant iTab here at Mobile World Congress.
Brilliant, great to talk to you. So basically, these are aimed at businesses to be housed in retail outlets, in centres for, well, anywhere where customers might want to interact with Android and iOS on a grand scale.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's about creating that, repeating, replicating that user experience that people have and use on their phone and love every day. It's about taking that same digital information and leveraging that through our digital devices to make that information more accessible to people who want to move to mobile banking or who want to go on e-commerce in a retail store, or more predominantly, certainly in our business, people who want to come on an exhibition stand and be wowed by the digital content and the information that the company you're exhibiting want to tell them.
Now, these giant iTabs, these interactive tablets, have actually been spread all around this massive MWC event across however many halls it is, 8 massive halls and various other events, for people to be able to interactively interact with the floor layout, with the app that Mobile World Congress have created here. What size are those?
We put 43-inch units around the show floor, about 30 units all up the boulevards. Generally running, we're replicating in exactly the same way the Show Guide app. The benefit is to create a better user experience, give people all the information, make it more accessible, but also we facilitated using NFC, ways in which people can just download the app straight to their phone if they don't already have it. And the purpose of that is just to make the app more accessible and get more people using it so they can find out more about the show and make the most of their day.
Brilliant. So you used the word accessible there, and that's absolutely what AbilityNet and the RNIB in the UK are all about. People with disabilities who might need a larger screen, who might need a more simple experience, to be able to take the simplicity of mobile and that interface and those apps, etc., and to make them as large as possible would really be a benefit to people with a range of different disabilities.
Absolutely. I mean, we've also been charged by GSMA, the event organisers, to create some of our smaller units on smaller podiums so they're accessible for wheelchair access. You know, so the actual organisers of the show are thinking about disability and thinking about how we can make that accessible to everybody.
Brilliant. Well, I hope you have a fantastic rest of the week. It's so busy here, and it's an awesome event. Hopefully, we'll both be back next year.
Well, that's lovely. I'll be delighted to see you again, and thank you for coming over and talking to us.
Fantastic. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
So we are here at the Vuzix booth with...
I'm Jordi Botha. I'm the Director of Sales for Europe.
Director of Sales for Europe. Thank you so much. So... I have just been trying on the Vuzix Blade glasses with Alexa support, and I just wanted to ask you a couple of questions about Vuzix smart glasses in general and their applications for disability. So you were saying a moment ago that you're already working and are aware of several very obvious and beneficial applications for people with different disabilities.
Yes, let me tell you first of all that thank you for visiting us. Vuzix is a hardware manufacturer. We only design and build the glasses. And then we have a huge portfolio of partners, companies developing software solutions that run under our devices. In fact, we have been seeing very successful stories where people that had difficulties with eye seeing, and a lot of partners have been very sensitive to this market, and they have developed several solutions. I can recall, for example, something for blind people, especially veterans in the US Navy SEALs. There was a company offering a specific product for people who had low levels of vision, and with the glasses that helped them to recognize objects and they could see much better what's around them. Also, there's the possibility of using the glasses to help you identify colors. This is red, this is green.
Yeah.
So all kinds of software solutions that probably you're more familiar today to see running under smartphones or tablets, you can put those same software as well in the smart glasses.
Brilliant. And even for people with no vision, it's got a camera on it and it has smarts built in, so it's able to recognize text, objects, and with the Alexa support, then you've also got the capability of controlling things by voice, getting information back verbally as well. It has speakers built into the arms of the smart glasses as well.
Correct, yes, it's a full new world. You know, with technology, every time you buy a phone from Apple, you have the feeling that it's already old because there's always a new version. That happens with technology. There's always exponential improvement. Every new model, every new microprocessor, it's much faster, much more powerful. So the same with the glasses. Every time, today we just announced a new strategic alliance with Qualcomm. We're going to be using the new microchips, especially known as the Snapdragon XR1, which is a very powerful device. Mm-hmm. And the way the technology grows that quickly, one day I can imagine that you put the glasses and it's just using the GPS. I want to go to the grocery and then put the glasses and they give you directions, turn right, turn left, or even identifying. Imagine putting the glasses and tell you if the street light is green or red.
Absolutely. And just for people, if you're not aware, these have built-in screens. So it's not just a camera and speakers and a microphone. So you can actually see information layered on top of what you're looking at in front of you. And there are so many applications for, there's an open SDK. So developers are able to really let their imaginations go wild with these Vuzix Blade glasses. And I can confirm that they don't look like great big clunky mixed reality headsets. These are really quite just like normal sunglasses, maybe slightly thicker arms, but you know, they're very lightweight comparatively. It's amazing to think they've got all of that functionality and the batteries built in there. And how much do these retail for?
They are now available for sale at our Vuzix store at www.vuzix.com, and it's about €990.
Brilliant, thanks very much. And I can confirm, well, you do lots of other models as well, but that price is incredibly low for that level of technology. So Vuzix really are leading the way in, you know, cutting edge technology at a much more affordable price than many of your competitors.
Yeah, thank you very much. Thank you again for visiting us. And if anybody listening has some interest and has some ideas or projects or wants to develop a software idea with our glasses, just get in touch with us. We love to help people, and we love to see over glasses being useful as well. Thank you.
Thanks. Have a brilliant rest of the conference.
Oh, yeah, I need it. It's going to be a long week.
Thanks very much. I'm just here at the Reticare stand, and I'm with the head of Reticare.
Yeah, Nilo Garcia, yes.
Thanks very much indeed. So Reticare is a really interesting product. Do you want to explain?
Yeah, we are based in science and what happened with the blue light, especially in the retina. So how this blue light that is coming from the devices can kill retina cells and how we can prevent that damage over the time.
So that's really interesting. So it mentions macular degeneration, which is one of the very common eye diseases, and that blue light over time can make damage to the retina to the extent that it could actually start macular degeneration.
Yeah, this is an aging process, and blue light is a risk factor for accelerating the process of damaging the cells. And we have already 15 years of studies behind, especially in animals, but also in vitro experiments with human cells that demonstrate that this damage can be done through the blue light, also through the devices that we are using every day.
Yeah, so that's the main point here. The blue light that the LED and LCD screens give out, so on our mobile phones, on our laptops, they are actually quite damaging. And this filter, which is easily applied to screens of all sizes, can filter out that damaging light.
Yes. Also, what we know is what happened after you filter. So in the latest experiment, it was very interesting, the comparison between animals in front of tablets. So what happened after 3 months with and without Reticare? And we demonstrate that after that 3 months with Reticare, there was no damage in the eyes of the animals. But in the other animals with the same devices and without Reticare, was 23% of cell death in these animals.
Wow. So Reticare.com is the website, and there, if people put in the model of their phone or of their laptop, etc., they can get the filter that is for the screen size of their particular device.
Yes, of course, we have almost all the devices available in our website, and we recommend to change the diet of light. So change all the devices in order to have the most sustainable light to your eyes during the day.
Brilliant. And you do them for glass lenses as well?
Yes, we have also for glasses, but we don't recommend glasses for this distance that we have to the devices because it's too close. So we recommend glasses for long distance, like for example using in the TV, but not for the devices that we use very close to the eyes.
Okay, so for long distance vision.
Yes.
So brilliant, that's great. And as I understand it, the price for a typical smartphone screen is around 12 or 13 UK pounds.
Yes, around that. And then you can go to 49 pounds for bigger screens. That also we have a very, very good products for 27 inch that we are very successful right now.
That's fantastic. Thank you very much indeed, and have a good rest of the conference.
Thank you very much to you. It's a pleasure.
Brilliant.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
So really interesting stuff going on at Mobile World Congress. Now, that's just some of the people that you spoke to, Robin. There are loads of people you've been talking to. We're going to hear more from them later. But I just find it really interesting, some of the technology out there that's in existence to prevent or make people aware of sight problems. And, you know, even the large, massive tablets, which sound like something that's great for business, could be a real boost for us.
Absolutely. Now, these are expensive items. It's around £3,000 for a big, I think it was 42-inch one, and they're not portable. They are mains operated. So if you've got that kind of money and you want to have them static in your house somewhere or in your work or wherever it might be, but that level of magnification, so you can see the full iOS screen or the full Android tablet screen, might be just up your street. And £3,000 sounds a lot of money, but actually there are specialist devices for magnifying text or having it spoken out, etc., that are in that ballpark as well.
Exactly.
So yeah, I mean, mostly aimed at public centres, retail outlets, organizations, businesses, that sort of thing. But seeing, well, not me personally, but for me, feeling, swiping through content on a massive screen like that was bizarre, to say the least.
Yeah, I mean, you think about the educational benefits, kids in school who have got partial sight, you know, using that instead of, you know, a smaller monitor. You know, the potential for this is huge. And I really like the way you were doing that, because I was thinking, as you were doing those interviews, I was thinking, do you know what's great? You're picking up here on mainstream tech, and you're giving these companies ideas as well, because they're thinking, yeah, hang on, there's a market here. And this is what I've been trying to say to people for years. Look, you know, forget the fact that we have specialist tech and this kind of tech and there's blind technology. Any technology should be accessible to a blind person. Anything. Doesn't matter what it is. And
absolutely,
it's so important that we tell that story to as many businesses as well as to the public as well, isn't it?
Every device, every gadget, every new development that's out there, I always think, okay, what's the disability application? What's the vision impairment angle here? And whilst it was actually my wife who was trying on those Vuzix smart glasses, they had a range of booths set up, and you look into each one and the heads-up display automatically labels cans on shelves with their prices and that sort of thing. There was another one where it was you were looking at a screen showing a football match in progress, and it was automatically labeling the people in the, you know, who were playing. Wow. On the pitch, who they were and what their stats were and things like that. And obviously those are kind of nice applications. But if you start thinking about, as we heard in the interview there, what the applications for people with a vision impairment might be, when you've got a screen that can layer on information over the top of what you're looking at, so you could zoom in to things, yep, you could put highlights around objects to make them more visible, because these AI-driven devices can find edges. I'm sure we all know about being able to, you know, blur the backgrounds in our pictures using our phones, etc. It only does that because it knows where the outline of your silhouette is. It knows where doorways are with these AR, you know, virtual reality things which layer on.
That stuff just blows my mind.
Absolutely.
It's like, how does it even know? And you take it for granted these days, don't you? I mean, there are people who take pictures, and like you say, you can add that blur effect. I can't remember what they call it in photography.
Bokeh.
Is that what they call it?
Yeah.
Bokeh. So, sounds like a dance. But, you know, you get this, you know, feature, and it's incredible how the technology knows how to do it and do it so well.
And we're piggybacking on mainstream technology here. This stuff is just there so that, you know, you can have your pictures that you upload to Facebook automatically indexed to make them better searchable.
Yeah.
Google obviously is very interested in being able to identify what's going on in the world and label it and index it and that sort of thing. But yeah, absolutely. With something like the Clue app that you talked about a couple of weeks ago, you know, it's literally using the off-the-shelf AR capabilities called ARKit within iOS to use the camera to identify as you walk around your house or the building, find the edges of doorways, find all the kind of milestones or waypoints that it can then calibrate how far you're walking and at what angle and that sort of thing. It's basically watching all these objects as you're just walking along and creating a map from that so that you can find your way back. So ARKit is incredibly powerful, and the smarts that are built into these smart glasses, and again, 990 euros sounds a lot of money, but believe me, for these kind of smart glasses that also have built-in screens, that's incredibly affordable. And again, we can think of these specialist devices that are on the market for people with a vision impairment. And this may actually, with this open SDK, software development kit, developers in the specialist AT arena, I'm sure will be thinking about how they can utilize that to make a much more affordable and, let's face it, more current piece of technology to help people with a vision impairment. So yeah, changing colors automatically in front of you if you've got a vision color blindness, for example, you know, it can find the edges of things so it can color them in with different colors so that you no longer have to worry about not being able to see red or green or whatever it might be. There's so many applications, and obviously it's got the A-Lady built in. I'm sorry, I said her name out loud a couple of times in that piece, but
you should have put a warning up.
Yeah, it, you know, for that alone, I would consider going down the smart glasses route with that built-in camera. There are so many possibilities as well.
Well, you're right, but I will say that Bose have just brought out in the States the AR frames. Now, these are sunglasses, and that essentially these are sunglasses with bone conduction headphones in them, and they sound amazing. And that's just at that, but the fact that AR is in them intrigued me, and I was quite intrigued by this. I'm like, okay, so how does that work? And looking at some of the demo videos, and, you know, you've got to remember it is a demo, so it's not, you know, it's always going to be painted as it's amazing. But what was quite fascinating, I think, about it was that when you're walking down, say, a main street, and this is what they do in the demo, they're walking down this main street, and you've got lots of shops on the left and lots of shops on the right, and with your Bose AR frames, you look at, say, a shop, whatever the shop would be, and in your ears, you hear it say, Bob's Burger Shop, or whatever it says.
Yep.
And, you know, it opened till 9 o'clock, and, you know, the cheeseburgers are the greatest cheeseburgers on earth. It's not just, like, name of shop. It's telling you more about it. It's giving you added information.
Yep.
Stuff which is of interest to everybody. And I think this is where, if this is where this technology is going, this could be great for us. I mean, I get that a lot of people quite like the idea of the smart glasses with the heads-up displays built in. But I think there's a lot of people as well who don't like that idea, who kind of don't want their vision clouded by all this other information. Mm-hmm. The idea of it being delivered audibly would appeal to a lot of people. And that, of course, in turn, is brilliant for us.
Yeah, we ride that wave, absolutely. Now,
hugely.
If you haven't got useful vision, then yeah, paying for the heads-up display in a pair of smart glasses isn't the best option. So something like the Bose smart AR glasses are much more affordable because they don't have those heads-up displays.
They're about $200 from the States at the minute. I mean, that's not bad.
No, that's a snip.
Well, maybe to you and I.
Two.
But, you know, but, I mean, the thing is that the technology's there, and like you're saying, you know, you might not want to spend extra. I've often felt this argument about smartphones. You know, I'm spending all this money on an iPhone XS, as I did from my most recent phone. And truth be told, I turn the screen off most of the time.
Yeah.
So I really should have the option to get an audio version of that, or, you know, just get a cheap screen version. And that's the reality of life. If you want the top end, well, you get all of it, don't you? You get the visuals, you get the audio, and that's the way it goes. But it is interesting to see how this technology is coming about. And I guess I think we're all waiting to see what Apple brings out.
Yes, there's no doubt in my mind whatsoever. And I've had that confirmed by Rene Ritchie, who is probably the most informed person about what's actually going on secretly within Apple, that they have a number of smart glasses and a number of other devices out there, you know, in their Apple spaceship. And I don't think any of them will come to the light of day until the technology is well and truly established, because something like the Bose demo video, it will look like the absolute best thing since sliced bread. And the Google Glasses, Google Glass videos that came out when that was first launched, very much oversold. And I think that that damaged their ultimate fate, or that, you know, that sealed their fate there.
Yeah,
it was early technology, but absolutely things are coming down in price all the time. They're getting better all the time. And as soon as you feel like there's something of use within your price bracket, then I would strongly recommend giving it a go.
Well, we're going to keep our attention on this smart glasses phenomenon, because there are lots of companies bringing out this tech, and it will be interesting to see what happens. I know Tim Schwartz, who was on the show with us last week, of course, and has been with us for a number of years, he's just bought a pair of the Bose AR frames. So he'll be back soon, I'm sure, to tell us all about his thoughts on those, which will be very interesting. And in particular, the augmented reality bill-in. That is going to be very interesting. Right, look, more from Mobile World Congress coming up, plus your emails. But first, I think...
News from the internet.
I think it's time to get back to the present. And, you know, I say the present, it feels like the future's already here in some ways, because Samsung had an event called Unpacked recently. Very recently, in fact. And they brought a slew, I love that word, a slew of devices. Let's kick off with the Galaxy S10s, shall we? Three models they brought out, the S10e, the S10, and the S10 Plus. Now, this technology inside these phones has improved a lot. I mean, I think we can agree that it has. You know, we could get really geeky and we could talk about all the specifications, but truth be told, I think, you know, my question to you is, do you think we're getting to a stage where this technology is becoming so good, and it is already so good, that actually these upgrades are just not as necessary as perhaps some might think?
I agree, totally. So, I mean, whilst the cameras will definitely be better, the processors slightly faster, we have reached peak smartphone, I would say. And, you know, it needs something to come along. And now you could argue that strange new form factors that I'm sure we'll talk about in a moment,
yes,
might be the next big thing. But there's only so much you can do to a rectangular slab of glass and metal or plastic. And I really do think that there is a huge amount of choice out there. My son has a OnePlus 6T, which is half the price of an iPhone and of these S10s as well. Well, the SE 10E is the kind of entry level one, but nevertheless, you can get much cheaper, hugely powerful ones that have really nice additional functionality, like a fingerprint sensor behind the screen. So you can put your thumb on the screen and unlock it that way. So you certainly don't have to go to the high end to get really nice, you know, cutting edge technology. And Android is obviously really very mature now, except in a couple of minor areas. And we could talk about Braille input, for example, is always a challenge on Android. But yeah, we're blessed with choice now.
Well, where do you stand? Because I know we've had this argument so many times in the show about Android versus iPhone, which I think is a bit of a, I don't know if it's an unfair argument anymore. Maybe it's more of a fair argument these days because of the work that Android, Google, I should say, have done in this space. Where do you stand on this argument? Do you have a preference? I'm kind of guessing by what you've said already you do.
Well, I think the gap is closing all the time. And if you put effective Braille input to one side, there isn't a lot in it, really. And it's what you were weaned on. It's very disconcerting and disorienting to go from one platform to the other because you have invested a lot of time and effort into knowing about how these things work, particularly with VoiceOver or Zoom or whatever magnification or access technology settings you've got there. And so it isn't a straightforward thing to switch over. You know, Microsoft, bless them, have changed most of the keystrokes in Narrator so that if you're a Jaws user, then you can just move straight over. And I think that was a fantastic thing to do.
Not what they said, though. Their exact words were, I think, you know, if you're used to using other screen readers. Namely Jaws, then I know exactly what you mean.
Yeah, so unless there was like a training mode on Android, which, or a kind of an iOS mode, then it might be really disorienting. And obviously there are a lot of people that are coming to these smartphones afresh. Mm. And to them, I would say, take your pick, really. I think that there is a lot to be said for both. I'm not in one camp or the other, although my personal tech is very much fruit related.
Yeah. Well, that depends on the name of the Android release. That could mean anything.
Well, that's true.
But no, you're right. I actually agree with that. And it's so easy to get into the argument of, well, which is better? And which is, I think, truth be told, I've got a Pixel 3 now and I'm using that as my work phone and I've got my 10S. And there's not much between them. I would argue that from a learning perspective, I've got more out of the Google Pixel because I think it has less gestures, less need to jump around the screen in the way you do. It has less commands to learn. So you actually can pick it up faster. Mm-hmm. But that means then you limit yourself a little bit. That's the only thing I would say. It feels a little bit more limiting, but only because I'm not used to it yet. I've spent years with my iPhone. And like you say, it's all about what you're used to. So, of course, I'm going to always go back to Apple and be comfortable there. you know, I love the home I was brought up in. Yeah. You know, the house I grew up on, I love it. You know, I'll always love it more than any other house because I was born there. And I also know where all the bits are that I can keep chocolate. But aside that, it is so so much now, I think, that the technology is so more closely aligned that if you were going out today to buy a smartphone and you were to go and pick an Android, you would not be losing anything. There was a time, not just with TalkBack or with any kind of accessibility support, but just generally Android just always seemed a bit weaker than iPhone. But that has definitely changed. And so much so, Robin, I have breaking news. Don't be too surprised. And don't hate me, but I have pre-ordered an S10 Plus.
Wow.
Do you know why? I'll tell you why, because I'm cheap. I'm cheap, right? And it doesn't sound like I'm cheap, big when I say I'm pre-ordering an S10 Plus, but I get free Galaxy Buds with it. So I thought, I want that.
I think that they are, you know, that is a very viable option. And Samsung have done an awful lot to improve the accessibility out of the box with their operating system that they've kind of layered on top of Android. And now that you can reprogram the Bixby button, Bixby is the equivalent of Siri or Cortana or Lady, etc. You could change that to the Google Assistant, for example. That's, you know, another reason why Samsung is definitely in the running again. And as I say, Braille input, because you have to temporarily turn off the screen reader to do Braille input. There isn't such a thing as direct touch mode in Android, and obviously any messages that come in or notifications whilst your TalkBack is off, you'll miss those. But if you can put up with that every time you want to input something, toggling that on and off, then that's really only the major sort of flaw these days. If I had to sum it up, I would say that Android is hugely functional in what you can do with those phones, in all the flavors of Android. And iOS probably has the edge on the accessibility side, because Apple really have lavished a lot of love and attention on making sure that every last corner of the experience is kind of a Rolls-Royce experience. So,
wow, you're like a big cuddly bear when you explain that, because honestly, that is the nicest way I've heard that argument put forward ever. It's normally Apple's the best, Android's terrible, you know, and it's not, you're absolutely right, it's not terrible. In fact, it is just as good. In fact, if you take accessibility out of the equation, there's nothing between them. I say nothing between them. What I would say is now that I think with the Android phones, and the reason I chose the S10 Plus for pre-order was because it's just looks beautiful. Mm. Whereas I don't think Apple have quite got that edge anymore. I think they've lost their beauty. I've got a little bit of vision that allows me to use the screen from time to time. And the strangest thing about the Android phones versus iPhones is that on average, not every app, but on average, if you're partially sighted and you can get that text size bumped right up to the top, you get the display size bumped right up to the top, you're going to notice that you can read a lot more than you could with an iPhone. Because, for example, Twitter and Facebook, which are the bugbears for me, I just can't read them on an iPhone, no matter what size the screen is. Whereas on an Android phone, I can. So that's a big deal. And if you're choosing a phone based on your vision and what's left of it, if you've got some useful vision, then an Android phone might be better for you from a vision point of view. Mm-hmm. Also, they've got these beautiful OLED screens. They call it Infinity O, but it's OLED screens. And they are beautiful, and they're so bright. And actually, because they don't have a lot of screen flicker off them, that makes a big difference for someone like me who's got nystagmus, because any movement or any kind of flicker at all will just be highlighted with me. But, you know, I'm going to sound like an advert here, but edge-to-edge display, no home button, no notch for the receiver, so you don't have that horrible notch that a lot of phones do, the iPhone does, and it's also got just a simple little dot opening for the front camera on the screen. So you can see everything as much as you want to. It looks amazing. It's got the touch sensor below the glass, which it says is the first ever. It's an ultrasonic fingerprint scanner built directly into the screen.
It might be the first ultrasonic one, but The OnePlus 6T has certainly had it for many months now, but that is actually a camera that shines through the LCD, I think it is, display. So maybe they're the first under-screen ultrasonic one, and maybe it's more secure. I don't know. But yeah, it's cool stuff.
When I get on the 8th, I'll tell you. It says it's got smart cameras and all the rest of it. It's got ultra-wide lenses or ultra-wide viewing, which I think is quite interesting for us again. You know, I think about apps like Aira, for example, which isn't really here in the UK properly yet. But if you were using it in the States, you know, having more ability to see more around you can help you. So much stuff. And my favorite feature of it, there's a lot of things I like about it, but one thing in particular I think is just brilliant, is it is a wireless charging phone, but it also has a wireless charger built in, which is amazing.
You can piggyback another phone.
Yeah. You could piggyback another phone. You could put your Galaxy Buds on there. And there you go. You've got your devices charging up. It's incredible. Just a quick mention of some of the other things they brought out. I'll be honest with you, I don't particularly care much about the Samsung Galaxy tablets, but, you know, if you do, they brought out the S5e. I think that's what it's called, the 5SE or the S5. I don't know which one round order that is, but I don't care, frankly. I don't have any interest in Android tablets. And I know we've had a few people asking questions about if you're buying a tablet, which is best. And it's interesting because with phones, I would say either or, but when it comes to tablets, I think it's a different ballgame. The other thing I want to mention is the Galaxy Watch. Now, they've brought out Galaxy Watch before. This new one's called the Active, and it's kind of built for the sports fans out there, so not for me. But what I am intrigued by, and I don't know the answer to yet, is whether or not it will be accessible. And it should be, based on all the reports I've read about Galaxy Watch running, is it Tizen operating system? Not Tizer, but Tizen. that would be interesting, especially being an Active Watch. But, you know, that would be amazing. Tizen does have accessibility in the form of a screen reader and some level of magnification, but there's no detail as to whether or not it's actually in these devices because they don't advertise it, which is really irritating. But that's what's come out from Samsung. I mean, are you impressed? I mean, I know we should really talk about the folding phone. Everyone's talking about the folding phone.
Well, briefly on the watch side of things. So Android Wear has recently become accessible. So if you're not in the Samsung ecosystem or universe, then there are now options for Android Wear for you to have in your watches. And there's loads of those right across the price ranges. So that's, you know, another reason why Android is a very viable ecosystem as well now. So yeah, Tizen has some accessibility in it. I've never actually either seen a demo of it or, you know, got my hands on one. No, so I can't say for sure. Yeah, no, me neither. So yeah, I don't know. You can get other Android Wear watches that work almost entirely from, you know, almost all their functionality with Samsung smartphones as well. So that is an option too.
Well, there you go. Samsung's Galaxy Unpacked event. Read all about it online and do tell us your thoughts. techtalk@rnib.org.uk is our email address. Right, you were at Mobile World Congress in Barcelona for us and you have been speaking to some more people, Robin.
Absolutely. So two here. The first one is a stand by a company called OOREDO, which is one word, OOREDO. And it's a flying taxi. It's like an enormous drone.
Oh, I cannot wait to hear more about this.
So I am standing outside the OOREDO stand, which is taking autonomous vehicles to a whole new level, excuse the pun, because this is an air taxi and there is an example of it there on their stand, and you can get inside and you can put on a VR headset and you can take a virtual flight in this. It looks like a great big drone, basically. It has these propellers pointing downwards and it takes two people inside and they have a working model on the stand. There is a screen, a video showing the air taxi in action in Qatar.
where it's being developed, and the hope is that it will be commercially available to take flights at the World Cup in Qatar in 2022. Now, I was hoping to be able to record an interview with someone, but after a long prevarication, they decided that actually they're not authorized to do a recorded interview. But I had a really good chat with them, and I stressed the importance that the interface, the way of hailing these taxis, the app in essence, will be accessible, and they got the message loud and clear there. So let's hope when this air taxi comes into service, potentially in a town near us in the not too distant future, then it will be accessible, just like Uber is, for example, today, and we would be able to take advantage of those. And potentially air autonomous driving could be even simpler than, well, even could be simpler than road autonomous driving, which I know there are still many concerns about, but really exciting technology. And it was just a shame they weren't able to talk to me in person, but yep, exciting times, guys. So here we are on the Google stand, and I am talking to
Paul.
Brilliant, thanks Paul. So got a couple of phones on the stand here. We've got a Huawei and a Samsung phone. Now, Samsung have just announced at their S10 event that the Google Assistant is coming to Samsung devices. Google Assistant is everywhere, isn't it?
Google Assistant right now, it's in all devices with Android 6.0 or more. And also, it's available for iPhone through the App Store. You can download the app Google Assistant.
And you were saying a moment ago how many devices it's on now?
Now it's close to be for a billion devices that are supporting Google Assistant, and we now on you can do over a million actions, actually.
I think it's broadly recognized, particularly in the disabled community who find these smart assistants so useful, that the Google Assistant is the smartest. It's like an arms race at the moment for these virtual assistants to just get better and better. So Google, I know, are very strong on accessibility and committed to making sure that all of their products are going to be inclusive going forward. But the Google Assistant is really useful for just everyday tasks, and also very powerful tasks as well.
Yeah, for example, now we're from a month ago, we released the routines. So just setting up some actions like lighting bulbs or setting the temperature at your house or more things. Just setting up a single sentence, you could have this made automatically. For example, I can set up my coffee machine and my lights and thermostat, and I can say, "Good morning, Google." And when it listens this, it knows that he has to do all these things.
Absolutely. Now, computers are incredibly empowering for people with disabilities, but they're also very complicated. And with the advent of the smartphone, that became simpler, a much smaller screen, a much simpler UI. But you can't get more simple and more powerful than just the conversational UI that these smart speakers offer.
Yeah, for example, I think it's really useful for disabled people because you can manage it with single options that are coming in the screen depending on the conversation you're having, or you just can talk with it, and you don't need to be like a robot. You can have like a fluent conversation with it, and it's going to understand you really well.
Absolutely. It's very forgiving when it comes to accents, and obviously it's multilingual. And also, if you can't speak, you can type your request to the assistant, and if you can't hear, then you can get versions with screens, and you can also, obviously, you know, you have a screen on your home assistant on your smartphones as well. What's the future then for Google Assistant?
I think we're keeping working on the language it can understand, because last year we had close to 15 languages, but now we have 30 languages over 80 countries. And every day, the voice recognition is like improving a lot for different accents. For example, it's not the same someone from London or someone from New York. So the accent, every day, it's improving a lot.
Absolutely. Thanks, Paul. Have a brilliant rest of the conference.
You're welcome. Thanks a lot.
there is a series of portholes that you can look through, and they give you information and interactive demos for things like the Pixel Slate, which is their version of the iPad, the Pixel 3 phone, and that's showing an interesting thing called Google Lens. And Google Lens allows you to use the camera on your phone to look at things, and then you can tap on the screen to get more information. It's like doing a search on Google for whatever text or pictures or objects that you see through the camera. So a big question mark in my mind is that going to be TalkBack accessible? Is it going to be accessible to people that have been using speech output? There is also the Google Mini, which is their version of, you know, the small version of Google Home, showing Google Assistant, etc. So lots of products here on show at the Google stand. Definitely a big presence here by Google at MWC.
No surprise there, I guess, that Google would be there in force.
Yeah.
But it is interesting, isn't it? Because we're starting to see the rise now of smart assistants with screens. And I'll be honest with you, this is the point where I start to get a little bit nervous. Because, you know, up until now, the smart assistants without screens just were so obvious to work for us.
Yeah.
But when you start adding screens, then things become visual, and then how much audible feedback do you get? And even with something like TalkBack on the device, how much usable feedback will you get, and does it actually become a hindrance?
I'm really optimistic that the smart speaker domain isn't going to become a screen ruled domain, simply because...
Oh, really?
I think so. There's a lot of versions of the Echo, of the Google Home, and obviously Apple are in the game with the HomePod. There is also the Harman Kardon Cortana one by Microsoft, but you know that's kind of way out there. But
who cares about that?
The majority of those don't have screens, and the ecosystem is so thriving, it's flourishing, and the vast majority of skills don't require a screen. So I think there might be a subset that will use the screen in a way that would preclude somebody who didn't have vision, but you don't have to install those ones. And there's still going to be a massive choice of other, you know, more than you could ever possibly take advantage of other skills or actions, as they're called on Google Assistant, that you can install or activate, enable to do lots of other things as well. And of course, the built-in stuff's just going to get smarter and smarter. Now, the reason why I'm confident is that the A-Lady in particular is in everything. It's in cars, it's in white goods, it's in glasses, it's in
toilets.
A lot of things. Yeah, exactly.
It's going into toilets.
Smart toilets that won't have screens. So I think the ecosystem is so thriving now that the danger period when maybe it would have been a phenomenon that always had a screen attached to it is long gone. Mm. And, you know, what can I say? If you can get a Billy the Big Mouth Bass that's A-Lady enabled, then we're home and dry.
Well, that'd be amazing. But, you know, I have to say, I am being a little bit short-sighted on this, and that's not a pun. But it comes to, when you think about it, for us as blind people, yes, the screen is not great. However, if you have hearing difficulties or you're completely or profoundly deaf, then the screen could be an absolute lifesaver for you. In fact, it's the exact opposite for you. I mean, we're seeing now with Live Transcribe and the new features that Google have brought out, which could help someone, I mean, not just understand, you know, if you're profoundly deaf, but also understand if you don't speak the language the person you're speaking to is say what the words they're saying. You know, all of this could be so beneficial to the wider public or pockets of the public in the way that, you know, the smart speaker, even though it was never built for blind people, is for us. So there really are benefits.
Absolutely.
For everybody with this technology. But at the same token, if you are going to buy an Amazon Echo Show, for example, you want to make sure that's accessible. I mean, I've got the Google Home Hub here, and I really like it. But and it does, you know, it audibly reads everything back to me anyway. If I ask it what the weather's going to be tomorrow, it will tell me. But it will also show me on the screen, and if I tap the screen, it will give me that extra information. I will say this, though. Google Home Hub? Still got some way to go with the old TalkBack response. I get a lot of coding errors on it, which I don't quite need to hear. But, you know, it's early days, and that's fair enough.
I think that choice is a good thing. Choice is always a good thing, so long as it doesn't limit, you know, it doesn't become the norm and the, and, you know, some inaccessible solution sort of prevails. There is a podcast that I am associated with that has a demo of a Google, I mean, a Amazon show, an Echo show, with the built-in voice view software, which we perhaps could feature next week. So people can have their concerns put to bed about how inclusive an Echo with a show, with a screen is.
Yeah, I feel like I should do that. Brilliant, actually. That's a dot-to-dot podcast, which, by the way, we created, didn't we? We did that.
Absolutely.
I keep telling people this, and no one believes me, because they say, it's good. How could you create it? But no, that is great. We should definitely feature that next week. We should also be talking about so much other stuff. There's so much to talk about. Orbit Reader 20 gets some updates. We're going to get to that in the coming weeks. We're going to be talking about the Orcam My Eye, the new app that they've launched. We're also going to be talking about lots of other technology that is out there at the minute. Some really interesting developments in tech. It's all here on the brand new Tech Talk 2.0. Thank you for sticking with us. Robin, it's been your first show. Have you enjoyed it?
Oh, it's been terrible.
Right. Well, that's always a good start. Although I have to say, that's exactly how we used to end the show with Sean and Tim. So nothing new there.
It's been a blast.
No, it has been great. And thank you so much for coming on. We're back next week, same time as always. Don't forget the podcast. You can find it in all the usual places on iTunes, Apple Music, Apple Podcasts. That's where you'll find us. Yeah, we haven't quite brought out albums yet. Maybe one day, Robin. You never know. Also, you'll find us on Google Play Podcasts. Keep your emails coming in as well. We love to hear from you. Get in touch. techtalk@rnib.org.uk. I know lots of you have been emailing in already over the past week or so. We will get to those emails on next week's programme. Till then, thank you for listening.
Thanks a lot, guys.
Thanks for listening to Tech Talk. Don't forget to check out and subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts for more great interviews and stories about technology for blind people. Just search for RNIB Tech Talk. See you next time.